Welcome on into the 5 o'clock hour of this Friday, August the 30th edition of Sports Talk as we gear up LSU football on Sunday, folks. Not tomorrow.
Tigers.
Tigers fighting on USC. The Trojans in Las Vegas.
Go Tigers.
How did we not get assigned to that gig?
Yeah, I don't know.
Covering that game.
I do appreciate it. We talked about this on this show before, but the real USC, not South Carolina. That doesn't count.
Does anyone really consider South Carolina USC?
South Carolinians.
Really?
Yes.
It's like, really, though, folks?
They do. They do. If you ask Darius Rucker, he will tell you that...
Only the Dolphins make me cry.
Yeah, the Dolphins. He'll tell you that the University of South Carolina has been a school longer than California has been a state. So... he thinks that means that they are the real USC, but I disagree. And I live there. I live in South Carolina, so people would talk to me about USC constantly, right? And I would always think, like, why are we talking about, you know, the USC Trojans? Like, what does this have to do with anything? And like, oh, that's right. It's the initials of this place. And then I'll give them UNC. I'll give them North Carolina, UNC. That's their thing. They just can't have USC. It doesn't work.
UNC?
Yeah, is that not?
Never heard UNC called UNC.
That's why the same thing with UGA. Why do you think the dog's named UGA?
Yeah, but UNC is like a term for an older gentleman.
And the University of North Carolina, UNC.
It's always UNC, but that's very funny.
You learned something today, right?
Yeah.
No, I mean,
hey, I lived there. I get to, you know, I'll tell you how to say it.
Yeah, there you go.
So, how did the locals feel about the song that when Petey Pablo put out, you know, raise your hand up and twist it like a helicopter, you know, take your shirt off. North Carolina, come on and raise up.
This is a weird diet. I don't know. This is a tangent I was not expecting. I don't think that South Carolinians necessarily claim North Carolina in the way that you would think, just okay. Because they're the Carolina Panthers. There are not that many Carolina Panthers fans in South Carolina.
And just in general, I don't think there's many South Carolina fans. I mean, well, with many Carolina Panthers fans,
yeah, it's not really an NFL place. It's a college football place. Like, you'll have Clemson, you'll have South Carolina, even like a team like Wofford, like people care about. The Citadel, people get excited about. But they don't really talk that much about the Panthers.
Maybe now this year with a new head coach and year two of Bryce, they'll get a little more excited there. But I know the owner, David Tepper, hasn't gotten into the fans' good graces with the way he's acted lately.
David Tepper?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, he basically took away the only thing that was South Carolina linked, because they did have their training camp in South Carolina for a while, I believe, and then they stopped doing that. So now it's just like, just call them the North Carolina Panthers. That's what you are. You are the North Carolina Panthers. Anyway.
Going to get into the real USC versus LSU talk. We got that coming up on Sunday. You can catch all the action, obviously, right here on WWL. Plus, I want to mention to folks, you can meet Bobby Deuce and Mike Dettillier tomorrow at Rouse's Market Uptown on Chapultepec. They'll be there from 1 to 4 o'clock for a special edition of Sports Talk that's celebrating everything football. The start of LSU in the college football season, the official start of the NFL season, plus, of course, Labor Day weekend where you can catch all your groceries at Rouse's. Hang out with the two Saints legends, Bobby Hebert and Deuce McAllister, and our NFL and college football analyst, Mike Dettillier, who's like an encyclopedia of football knowledge. That's at the Rouse's Market on Chapultepec tomorrow from 1 to 4 o'clock, and right here also on WWL and the Odyssey app. But yeah, the Vegas kickoff is a 6:30 start, and I appreciate that because usually those West Coast games, they end up being later on in the evening, and old man Steve can't usually make it up that past, especially for those late Pell starts.
Yeah. I have a 9:30 bedtime. I try to hit it.
I am too,
I
right?
I try to hit it, but, you know, the NFL
you guys are
messes
unks.
With me.
Thank you.
I'm an unk. Speaking of, you know, kickers make more money than I remember. You see Cameron Dicker? Dicker the kicker. He signed a 4-year, $22 million extension. That's a lot for a kicker, right?
Yeah.
That's all I got. Not a lot to talk about. We're watching U.S. Open tennis. No one wants to hear about that.
I like Dicker the kicker better than the money badger.
The money badger. You know, I was actually talking to someone about like old viral videos, speaking of honey badger. And that's, you know, that nickname is from like an old viral video.
Right.
And it just came up because I made a reference to this.
Honey badger does what he wants. He doesn't care.
The snake. I'm a snake.
Oh, and I said the money badger.
Is it the same guy?
Michael
Badger. The voice sounds similar.
It's not the same guy, but it's the same type of video.
Right.
And it's just funny to me because, like, I think a lot of kids would call him the honey badger, and they would have no idea it's from this guy named Randall did this weird narration of a honey badger.
Yeah, like a National Geographic video of the badger.
He's eating bees.
He does what he wants. He doesn't care. And that's what it all came like. Tyrann Mathieu doesn't care. He does what he wants.
Yeah, yeah. It's connected because we're talking about LSU, right?
There you go. Right.
We can get into it. And because I was talking to Kat Terrell about this because she was at LSU at the time, and it was just like a thing that occurred. Like they saw the video and they start talking about it on message boards, and I can't remember the coach's name, but he found it and he just like showed him on the bus. He was like, "You're the honey badger now," and that's where that nickname came from, which is hilarious.
And it stuck, right?
Because it's such a good nickname, and I don't know if he had his hair like that prior.
Or did it afterwards,
right? It's also the hair.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's one of the best nicknames of all time in sports, in my opinion. It's such a great nickname.
I'll just remember one time. I forget what game it was, but he had, I think it was a return for a touchdown on a kick return. And the voice of the Tigers then, Jim Hawthorne, was like, "The Golden Badger."
The Golden
Badger. And I was like, no, that's not right.
The Golden Badger. We're getting a fifth set in Tiafo Shelton. Which, this is like the only reason I watch U.S. Open tennis is I watch the Americans until they're all out. And then I like, okay, I'll see. Okay, are the good guys in the final? If not, I'm done.
It's just sad we don't have that great American in tennis right now.
Well, I don't know if they ever have. Or since like Andre Agassi, right?
Right.
Or Pete Sampras. Like Roddick was solid for like a day, but yeah.
Well, we're going to get into some of that LSU audio, I promise you. First up was Brian Kelly talking about the challenges of what this offense, learned by Lincoln Riley, brings from the Trojans.
So the air raid offense is one that we've seen many times. It's precision. It is fundamentally, based upon wanting to throw the football, but will attack you in the run game if you are over committing yourself to the pass. And so its roots are in Mike Leach's offensive structure, and we've seen quite a bit of it. Each head coach has its own way of kind of tweaking it a little bit. Lincoln has his own flavors. They implement the tight end much more than any of the air raid offenses that we've gone against, and do a really good job with the tight end on the field, so they're not a four wide receiver air raid, which gives them a better opportunity to include a run game and be good at the run game. So what does it give us in terms of challenges? A really good play caller, somebody that's going to keep you off balance, reverses, trick plays. He's going to be non-traditional in many ways. This is not going to be, that seems like a call I would have made. I think these will be times where our guys have to be on their toes at all times.
Going to be a tricky offense this LSU squad faces. And I like the Tigers. They're replacing a quarterback too, a Heisman Trophy winner. Caleb Williams now with the Bears. They've got Miller Moss running the show. He's a senior quarterback over there. Thrown 92 passes in 12 career games, but man, that was largely in blowouts when Williams was running the show. So interested to see what this defense from the Tigers, which obviously everybody wants to see what is they're capable of this season after a dismal showing a year ago, what they're able to do against this high-powered USC offense.
Wait, so a Lincoln Riley team isn't going to start a transfer quarterback?
No, it's unbelievable.
Wow. It's so weird. It's almost like that's possible to do. It's this season is going to be so much about Garrett Nussmeier, though. Like, if Garrett struggles, everyone's going to, I think, feel like people are going to fall off LSU quickly, at least from a national perspective.
What's weird is I haven't heard really any concerns about Nuss taking over a quarterback, though. It's just like, oh, yeah, he can handle it.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a different type of quarterback, right? Like, he's not going to run around. He's going to be in the pocket, right? That
right.
takes away a good bit from your offense that you were able to do last year. So, I don't know. It's not going to be as exciting, right? Like, I think there's just something about watching Jaden Daniels. You knew at any point he was going to take over a game. And I just don't know if you get that with Garrett. I don't know if you get that kind of high upside. Like, he's got to make decisions. He's got to be a good decision quarterback. Like, he can't be throwing interceptions. Because I just don't think he's as dynamic, and he's not going to be able to make up for the lapses the way Jaden did, although Jaden didn't throw interceptions either. So that's why you got number two in the draft.
Hard to believe. I think everybody's talked about this a bunch. Obviously, with LSU, they have not won a season opener since the national championship season in 2019.
Wow.
Well, Coach Kelly talks about those battle scars. He talked about that early in the week and was asked about them again, that he mentioned that they provide extra motivation for players in this season opener.
I mean, look, it's pretty – I think you have to always keep in mind that there's a number of players on this team that have experienced, you know, two openers where they weren't successful, including myself. So, you know, there's a resolve there that, you know, you want to be prepared in any way to see that you come out victorious. And so their preparation has been outstanding. They've prepared. Now they know they've got to perform. So they're going to handle what they can handle. But I think they're going to draw on experiences. And that's what I meant by battle scars. Battle scars are really about, you know, the things that you can pull on that are going to be helpful for you and allowing you to be your best when your best is needed. And I think that that's what we'll see with a lot of our guys that have played in these games. They're going to draw on past experiences that are going to help them be successful.
You know, you mentioned it's not going to be maybe as exciting, the offense, but for me at least, this LSU team is getting back this season from what I've been hearing is running the football. They want to run it down your throat right now, and we'll see if that's successful with this offensive line. Obviously, everybody's been, you know, juiced up about that being the strength of the squad.
Well, and here's the thing. If you don't have to score 40 points a game to win, it's a lot easier, right? I think that's one of the reasons it was exciting on offense last year, was because it was, if you didn't score on every possession, you probably weren't going to win.
Well, plus the player, too. Like you mentioned with Jaden Daniels, you didn't know, like, if he turned the corner, you're like, oh, my God, he could take it to the house.
Yeah. That's definitely true. That's definitely true. But at the same time, it's like, okay, can we have a – I would – you can give back some on offense if you can at least stop someone. Stop anyone on defense.
We'll see if that happens.
I still have nightmares. Like, Ole Miss just scored again. Oh, man.
Don't say that. LSU fans will be picked. We're going to get into some more college football talk coming up after the break. Joe DeLeon, he analyzes football for the Believe Podcast Network, college and the NFL draft. So we'll get his insights on this game and so much more this week one of college football weekend, coming back right after the break here on WWL. Football, 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 talking more and more football. Gotta love it, folks. We're back here on Sports Talk, getting into some of the college scene with college football and NFL draft analyst for the Believe Podcast Network now, Joe DeLeon. Joe, how you been?
Good, good. Last night was a nice little teaser for what's going to be an exciting weekend of football. I'm excited. We're finally back.
Yeah, no, tonight we've got a matchup, too, with Oklahoma Temple. I don't know how exciting that is, though.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it.
Right.
I'm doubting that it's going to be close, but I'll probably watch that.
Looking up, obviously, everybody here in Louisiana, we're pretty stoked about the LSU-USC matchup coming on Sunday, even though it's a little strange, obviously, Sunday, but we'll take it. Obviously, a primetime matchup coming down in Las Vegas. Looking at this LSU team going into the season, I think there is no bigger question than, obviously, on the defensive side of the ball. They can't be worse than last year, can they, Joe?
Well, I seriously don't think that they're going to take any step back. I think there's only, as you're saying, there's only one direction for them to go, which is up. And I honestly attribute a lot of their issues from last season to poor coaching. I know that it's kind of like a blanket statement to throw out there when your defense is as bad as LSU's was. But there are athletes in LSU's secondary that felt like they were misused. I think that Blake Baker was a tremendously gifted defensive coordinator for Missouri last year, who turned a group of guys that were quality athletes into some of the best in the SEC. And I think there's room for that with this LSU secondary. Where I do have some concern is the interior of the defensive line, which is something that I think everybody is aware that LSU wasn't super aggressive in the transfer portal in trying to bring in replacements for the three guys that they put out to the NFL. If they have any issues this year, it's going to be against teams that run the ball up the middle aggressively, but I think that at the very least the secondary is going to take a nice leap forward under Blake Baker.
Yeah, I am curious, what is your take on the transfer portal in that way? Because I kind of feel like Brian Kelly to some extent has it right in the sense that you don't want to be the team that that tries to bring in key pieces every year in the transfer portal, because that's unsustainable. You do want to recruit and develop to some extent, but it has to be kind of a balance. I'm just curious, where do you see that this year? Because I think there are different schools of thought, no pun intended, in terms of how to build your roster in that way.
Yeah, and I think that Florida State's a really perfect example of that, because last year we were commending them for the way that they used the transfer portal to their advantage to go and find guys like Jared Verse, who had been there for his second year last year and turned out to be a superstar-level player. But we're seeing this year the guys that they have in the interior, they brought in Marvin Jones, Farmer, who I believe was a transfer portal guy as well. They don't really have the presence in their interior that one would hope Florida State to have after some of the roster turnover that they went through last offseason. So I completely agree with that sentiment. Your recruiting, especially along the offensive and defensive lines, has to be through the high school ranks. You need to have really good coaching and development at those positions in order to take that next step. You can go and find various pieces to fill small holes here and there to bolster your roster, but the only way that you're going to get to that national championship standard, like we see with Georgia and teams like Alabama and what Michigan had last year, is by keeping guys, using NIL to keep guys within the program and developing them and helping them grow.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's like, I feel like if you're looking at the transfer portal, if you don't feel like you're a contending group, if you can't develop a contending group underneath the transfers that you put on top of that to maybe get yourself over the top, then you don't have a program to begin with. I think that's kind of what Colorado was dealing with last year, where it's like, you can attract all this top-tier talent, but where was that kind of bedrock of college talent, top-end college talent? Because, like, you can have two top options. You can have Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders, but if the underlying talent level isn't there, then you don't really have much to work on.
Yeah, we saw that last night. That showed up, this whole roster turnover issue and heavy transfer portalness for Colorado. It was really starting to show up, especially with their offensive line. I think their offensive line looked improved, but the interior was just getting smoked by a North Dakota State defensive line that isn't exactly producing premier NFL talent in the interior of their D-line. They were getting by off of some really easy stunts and some really just simple five-man pressures that they were sending. That, to me, shows that they don't have the chemistry right now because it's such a brand-new group. And I also wonder if the guys that they brought in are good enough to be, at least at the bare minimum, quality starters for Colorado. But the more I think that the transfer portal is going, like the longer that it's around, we're going to see more and more examples of these teams that live and die by the portal, and there's going to be some success stories. Like, I think Miami this year could be a success story, and we're going to see so many failures that are going to make us really rethink if that's the best way to go about it.
When you look at this LSU-USC matchup too, both quarterbacks replacing Heisman Trophy winners. For folks like LSU fans want to know more about this kid, Miller Moss, what should we know about the new quarterback for the Trojans, although he is a senior going into this matchup against LSU?
Yeah, for some reason I feel like it's like forgotten in this whole turnover because of Caleb Williams and how premier of a big name he was, that he was still a decently highly recruited kid. He was a high four-star. He was not a top quarterback in his class, but still highly recruited. He fits within the system of what Lincoln Riley's looking for, which is pinpoint accuracy, quick decision-making. We saw that in the bowl game. But I will point out, what he's going to do in this game, it's a bit of a question mark. It's an enigma. We don't totally know how he's going to play. That bowl game was against Louisville backups in a situation where it didn't really matter who won. So we don't know for sure if Miller Moss is going to be the guy that threw for six touchdowns last December. He's still, though, very gifted. It seems like he's a very smart kid, and he's been there for so long that he's experienced in the system. I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to make a lot of mistakes. What's really going to help him, because this system is so built on speedy, athletic receivers, that receiving group that last year was strong is getting older and more developed. Zachariah Branch, I think, is somebody to pay close attention to in this matchup. If the LSU secondary maybe isn't as improved as we're hoping for, he could end up popping off for a big game.
Looking at the LSU run game, it's going to be expected to be ground and pound for this squad this year. And you look at the offensive line, obviously, being the strength of the squad. But what's your take on this group of Tigers running back going into this season?
Yeah, I'm really excited for this grouping, especially Caleb Jackson, who I think is going to burst onto the scene and be a premier back if he lives up to the hype. The plays that he had in very small sample sizes were really exciting. And I feel like this running back room is kind of built like the running back rooms that Brian Kelly had when he was at Notre Dame, which was a couple different styles and then an ability to rush between the tackles, rush ground and pound like you're talking about. You're not going to have a Jaden Daniels type athlete back there, so you're going to need to have a more diverse offensive approach. And you don't have Brian Thomas Jr. and Malik Nabers. You can't rely on those guys to be open easily deep down the field. So they're going to need to rely on the running game.
Yeah, so, this is kind of more vague. Steve goes to LSU, I go vague. But, with the expanded playoff this year, I am curious, it feels like a team like Florida State, for example, you lose to Georgia Tech, it would almost seem like their season's over. Like, they don't have a chance. Well, in the sense of at least getting to the college football playoff. Once you lose to Georgia Tech in the opener, it almost feels like impossible for you to get your way back into that top four. Now that it's 12, it feels like that opens up things immensely in terms of you could actually turn your season around after losing a game like that. How do you feel like that's going to be the case? Is it almost like you open up possibilities across the landscape that just didn't exist before? And how do you see certain teams kind of handling that?
Yeah, and I think that's going to create a lot of contention at the end of the season when we're picking those final spots, because there's going to be some late surging teams that have some silly losses on the earlier part of their schedule that we're going to point to and be like, hey, what the heck? Why is this team suddenly, why are we forgetting about this? It's something that we've never had to do before. There's going to be two lost teams, maybe even three lost teams that are vying for those final spots in the playoff. And I think it's going to happen less for the weaker Power Four conferences, that being the ACC and the Big 12. I think with the SEC and with the Big 10, we're going to have a lot of those debates of, hey, is this 9-3 team worth putting in over this 10-2 team? And that's certainly going to cause a lot of debating. But in line with the Florida State aspect of things, I almost even look at the Big 12, where we're going to have probably a two-loss Big 12 champion potentially that goes on to win the conference and has a bye. That also, I think, is going to create a lot of frustration from fans. They're going to be like, well, this team's clearly not as good as the other top three seeded teams. Why do they deserve to have the bye that they do? There's just so many different angles. When you had four teams, it was cut and dry. There were still debates on who ended up getting in those last spots like we saw this past year. But there's so many different angles to debate this, and especially how things are going to be ranked. It just opens things up for so many more conversations, which it's a good thing for us as media members that we have more to talk about. But I'm sure will lead to a lot of frustration from some fans.
Talking with Joe DeLeon, college football and NFL draft analyst for the Believe Podcast Network. And Joe, obviously tomorrow we wake up, we get number one ranked Georgia taking on number 14 Clemson right away. But what are some of the other games, at least for you, that you're looking forward to that could be entertaining matchups in the first Saturday of college football?
Yeah, the first one that I think has the most intrigue for it for the storylines is Miami versus Florida in Gainesville, because both these coaches need to get this win. They need to win big this year. And Billy Napier doesn't need to go on to win the SEC, but he needs to get a win against a rival at home. He needs to prove that, hey, I'm still putting a little bit of life into this program. We're not dead yet. Maybe win seven games. He can buy himself a tiny bit more time. If they lose at home, oh, there is going to be so much pressure on his head because of the expectation that they should beat a team like Miami when they're hosting them. Miami, on the other hand, this should be an expectation that they win, because this is the year that Florida State's weakened and that they're going to go on and win the ACC. You can't stumble in week one. Maybe you could against an out-of-conference opponent, but you need every bit of momentum that you have, especially because their schedule is on the lighter side for ranked opponents that they're going to see. The other game that's not getting as much love, I feel like, because that Clemson-Georgia matchup, is West Virginia versus Penn State. It was popping. It seemed like it was pretty crazy for the Pat McAfee show and for classes being canceled. Everybody's pretty pretty amped up in Morgantown, and people really undermine seemingly that that is a tough place to win. Penn State is a team that lost a lot, especially defensively. Two completely new coordinators. That could be a maybe an upset watch type game, and that's why I'm circling that one to be an entertaining one to keep up with.
Looking at now, going to go to your NFL draft analyst hat. With the Saints picking Taliese Fuaga in round one of this year's draft, what was your take when they decided to move him from right tackle now to left tackle this year? Big deal or not so much?
I want to see how comfortable he ends up getting. I think that when you've got good football players and you need to ask them to step up in any way possible, sometimes you have to ask them to do things that they're not comfortable with.
Yeah.
But I got to be honest, I hate it. This isn't a situation where you've got a swing tackle who's played multiple spots. Like Andrew Thomas, when he was at Georgia, is the first guy that comes to mind. Like, he played some left and right tackle, so if he had to play right tackle early on in his career, it wasn't really that big of a deal. But Fuaga is tried and true. He is a right tackle. He has the mentality of a right tackle. He's got the build of a right tackle. He's downhill. He's going to maul you. He's a run-blocking first guy who's great in pass protection. It almost feels like a square peg in a round hole. Fuaga, I would have put him at guard or at right tackle before I would have put him at left tackle. And it just kind of chalks up to the Saints' offensive line situation not being great, and that they need their best players to play at the best positions. I just hope that Fuaga, being as good of an athlete as he is, it doesn't slow him down. And maybe there's an ability for them to bring in a true left tackle and bump him back to right tackle, and things could really get back in a real form from there.
Yeah, just kind of mining that NFL draft hat a little bit more. So I think everyone is probably going to bet on Caleb Williams to win Rookie of the Year. It's a smart play. You could also probably go Jaden Daniels, whatever. If you had a dark horse rookie who could factor into that offensive Rookie of the Year equation, who would it be?
I don't know if I'd consider him to be a dark horse, but you just mentioned Caleb Williams. I think that Roma Dunze could have potentially a ridiculous season, and that would require for Caleb Williams to have a big year too. But if there's some way for him to box out Caleb Williams, I think Roma Dunze is going to have a huge year because of the other receivers around him that are going to elevate him, DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. I think DJ Moore is going to take most of the targets, but Keenan Allen's just going to distract attention away from Roma Dunze, and I think he's going to have plenty of opportunities to shine. And then if I'm going to throw out an unexpected running back play, Trey Benson, I think that he landed in a great situation to have a very productive rookie season with the Cardinals. Seems like their run game's been looking for some sort of a spark, and the former Florida State running back is a home run waiting to happen and could have some really huge plays for the Cardinals.
Joe, always great stuff. Appreciate your time, and we'll be talking to you soon. Enjoy all the ball going on now.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Joe.
Joe DeLeon, college football and NFL draft analyst for the Believe Podcast Network. You can check out all his work there. When we get back, we'll get into Triple Option, where everyone gives a take on some of the stories going on in sports today. We'll be right back after this on WWL. Back in on Sports Talk, our fun Friday edition, as we get ready for the big old weekend, folks. Getting into our Triple Option feature right now, talking about some of the top stories in sports. And guys, I'm going to dip into the Rattler hype. And
oh, man.
Guess what? Diana Rossini, Chase Daniel, they have a podcast, got into it a little bit, and Diana Rossini talking about how she's been hearing quite a buzz building in the Saints facility about Rattler.
They drafted Spencer Rattler. What's the vibe down there in NOLA?
All right, so I'm so glad you used the word vibe, because that I love checking in with teams this time of year. Just like, what's the vibe? Give me the vibe, you know? And the text I received was from someone in the building. Was like, the vibes are really, really high. Capital letters, ooh, right? And so, of course, the follow-up question is, wait, is he going to beat out Carr? Or do we have a quarterback contract? And it was like, no. But we...
They said no. There's no quarterback controversy right now.
No, there is not. But Chase, okay, we got to keep an eye on this one. I think this is going to be a situation where you have the veteran quarterback as the starter, like we see in New England, we see in Pittsburgh, and then once things go a little weird, could they be calling for the backup? The New Orleans Saints have a really good quarterback situation right now in terms of if Derek Carr doesn't pan out, they have a lot of confidence in what their backup in Rattler can do.
Chase Daniel also responded with the tweet of this video. Also, I just love that Rattler has his own emoji ready, and I think you mentioned that on our podcast.
It makes you like 10% cooler. It doesn't even matter. You could be terrible, but if you have an emoji, like 10%, whatever you're at, plus 10%.
But yeah, of course the vibe is high here, but I still think to talk about the notion that Rattler is going to be taking over for Carr anytime soon is kind of absurd to me. And I think, you know, folks banking on Carr having a rough start to this season and then all of a sudden the Saints are just going to be quick to yank him out to put the rookie in, it does not compute for me.
No, I don't think you – here's the thing with rookies. It's – and this is you stole my. I was going to go Rattler too, so we're going to kind of just double up on this. It's I don't mind playing a rookie as a rookie. I don't mind starting a rookie quarterback if the season is toast. I don't want to put a rookie in a situation where they have game pressure of like if this this is going to be a season that fails because I screwed up.
Right.
Like I go back to Eli Manning with the Giants. They started Kurt Warner for 9 weeks. They basically. Their season was over, and then Eli got the rest of the way, and then he was the starter from that point.
That
I think
makes
that's
more
the
sense,
smart
right.
way, because like, yeah, I want to get him experience, but I don't want to get him experience in a situation where it's going to hurt him more than it's going to help him. And you know, I've been trying to get to the bottom of like, why is everyone so mad about the backup quarterback announcement, quote unquote announcement? Which I don't know if you would even announce a backup quarterback in most situations, but I think I've gotten to the bottom of it, which is people have convinced themselves that the decision on who's the backup quarterback this year will somehow hold undue weight on the starter of the future.
Gotcha, and right. Who's the heir apparent.
Exactly, and that's really not what it is. You're picking a backup quarterback this year based on who you think gives you a better chance to win a game if you have to throw them in there. Your backup quarterback, the scenario you put them in is basically about survival. It's not about development. You don't throw them in the third quarter of a game saying, can you hold this lead, and say, try to develop while you're out there. No, just do what you can. Don't screw up. So it's really not about development. And I think there's a scenario where you say, hey, Jake's the backup this year because you don't want to throw a rookie into a situation where he's not going to be having good protection. He's not going to have playmakers. You're going to have a defense teeing off on you because you haven't game planned anything. I think, if you were in a scenario where you had to play a quarterback to start, I think you would be more likely to play Rattler in general because you have a week of prep and you can game plan, you can do whatever, and he can be prepared to go in there. Because I do think people undervalue the developmental curve from year one to year two in the sense of like everything's going 100 miles an hour in year one. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the number one pick. I don't care if you're the number 150 pick. I don't care if you're whatever Tom Brady was. Everything's going too fast as a rookie. Now you get into year two and things feel like they're slowing down. So I don't know, but either way, I need people to understand that like all being the backup quarterback this year, all that guarantees you is that you're the backup quarterback this year. It does not mean anything in terms of like, oh, you are the future starter of this team. Because when I think when Dennis Allen says they're still competing, he's not necessarily saying they're still competing to be the backup. He's saying they're still competing in the sense of like, yeah, who's the next quarterback? That's the competition, and you're going to get into next offseason if you're not going back to Derek. These guys are going to compete. That's the competition. It's not to see who gets to hold the clipboard.
Derek. Charlie, you going to make it a trifecta and talk about Rattler too?
No, I'm going to talk about Lincoln Riley.
Okay.
Guys, looking at, we heard the audio from Brian Kelly earlier on
in
the hour about Lincoln Riley's offensive scheme, the air raid offense, and how it's been so efficient throughout the years. And I went and looked up the numbers, and I mean, he's right. Since he became a head coach in 2017 at Oklahoma, did you guys know that Lincoln Riley's worst point per game year total in that finish in the FBS, it was 8th.
Wow.
Out of 130 teams.
Yeah.
So going year by year, 2017 OU, they finished with 45.1 points per game, 12-2 record. They finished 3rd in the FBS. In 2018, 48.4 points per game, 12-2, finished 1st in the FBS. 2019 OU, 12-2 record, 42.1 points per game, 6th. 2020 OU, 9-2, 43 points per game. 2021 OU, 39.1 points per game. That was the lowest total, was 39.1 points per game, which finished 8th. And then 2022 at USC, first year there, 41.4 points per game with an 11-3 record, finished 3rd in total points per game. 2023 USC, 41.8 points per game, despite that 41.8 points per game. They finished with an 8-5 record, which is the worst record in Lincoln Riley's coaching tenure so far. Guys, he just puts up points. There's no other way to put it. In 92 games that he's played, a 74-18 record, and a big reason for that, his team's averaged 43 points per game. Yeah. 43 points per game in a sample size of 92 games. So LSU's defense, yes, we've heard they've been improved under new DC Blake Baker.
Right.
They've got a good assistant coaching staff there. It's going to be a test, regardless of, you know, new quarterback Miller Moss. Like, as Joe DeLeon said, still a four-star quarterback, just a guy kind of similar with Garrett Nussmeier that stuck with their program, sat behind Heisman-winning quarterbacks, and they have playmakers on the field. So, you know, expect some points and expect some fireworks, I would say, in Las Vegas, because that's all that Lincoln Riley's done for basically his entire career.
Definitely seems like we're headed for a shootout in Las Vegas on Sunday night. That was Triple Option, folks. We'll be back with more sports talk closing out the 5 o'clock hour right after this on WWL. Stay tuned. Just want to remind everybody, LSU kicking off the season against USC Sunday in Vegas. You can start your game day with Mike Dottiglia and guest host Jeff Palermo. That's at 2 o'clock in the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgate Show. You can even meet up with the guys. They're going to be live from the Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge. Come out and size up the game at Acme with 16 surround sound TVs and the best drink specials around. Great place to hang out and talk LSU football. All thanks to the good folks at Map Construction. We'll hear from renowned defensive line coach Pete Jenkins and WWL TV sports director Doug Mouton at 4:30. The LSU Sports Network takes over with their official pregame show, and then it's kickoff with the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, and color analyst Jacob Hester at 6:30. Tigers versus Trojans Sunday on WWL. We'll be back with more sports talk right after the top of the hour news break right here. Stay tuned. Back in on Sports Talk, our fun Friday edition as we get ready for the big old weekend, folks. Getting into our triple option feature right now, talking about some of the top stories in sports. And guys, I'm going to dip into the Rattler hype. And guess what? Diana Rossini, Chase Daniel, they have a podcast, got into it a little bit, and Diana Rossini talking about how she's been hearing quite a buzz building in the Saints facility about Rattler.
They drafted Spencer Rattler. What's the vibe down there in NOLA?
All right. So I'm so glad you used the word vibe, because NOLA. That I love checking in with teams this time of year. Just like, what's the vibe? Give me the vibe, you know? And the text I received was from someone in the building. Was like, the vibes are really, really high. Capital letters, ooh, right? And so, of course, the follow-up question is, wait, is he going to beat out Carr? Or do we have a quarterback contract? And it was like, no. But we...
They said no. There's no quarterback controversy right now.
No, there is not. But Chase, okay, we got to keep an eye on this one. I think this is going to be a situation where you have the veteran quarterback as the starter, like we see in New England, we see in Pittsburgh. And then once things go a little weird, could they be calling for the backup? The New Orleans Saints have a really good quarterback situation right now in terms of if Derek Carr doesn't pan out, they have a lot of confidence in what their backup in Rattler can do.
Chase Daniel also responded with the tweet of this video. Also, I just love that Rattler has his own emoji ready, and I think you mentioned that on our podcast.
It makes you like 10% cooler. It doesn't even matter. You could be terrible, but if you have an emoji, like 10%, whatever you're at, plus 10%.
But yeah, of course the vibe is high here, but I still think the talk about the notion that Rattler is going to be taking over for Carr anytime soon is kind of absurd to me. And I think, you know, folks banking on Carr having a rough start to this season and then all of a sudden the Saints are just going to be quick to yank him out to put the rookie in, it does not compute for me.
No, I don't think you – here's the thing with rookies. It's – and this is – you stole my – I was going to go Rattler too, so we're going to kind of just double up on this. It's – I don't mind playing a rookie as a rookie. I don't mind starting a rookie quarterback if the season is toast. I don't want to put a rookie in a situation where they have game pressure of like, if this this is going to be a season that fails because I screwed up.
Right.
Right? Like, I go back to Eli Manning with the Giants. They started Kurt Warner for 9 weeks. They basically – their season was over, and then Eli got the rest of the way, and then he was the starter from that point.
That
I think
makes
that's
more
the
sense,
smart
right.
way, because like, yeah, I want to get him experience, but I don't want to get him experience in a situation where it's going to hurt him more than it's going to help him. And you know, I've been trying to get to the bottom of like, why is everyone so mad about the backup quarterback announcement, quote unquote announcement, which I don't know if you would even announce a backup quarterback in most situations. But I figure, I think I've gotten to the bottom of it, which is people have convinced themselves that the decision on who's the backup quarterback this year will somehow hold undue weight on the starter of the future.
Gotcha, and right. Who's that, the heir apparent.
Exactly, and that's really not what it is. You're picking a backup quarterback this year based on who you think gives you a better chance to win a game if you have to throw them in there. Your backup quarterback, the scenario you put them in is basically about survival. It's not about development. You don't throw them in the third quarter of a game saying, can you hold this lead and say, try to develop while you're out there. No, just do what you can. Don't screw up. So it's really not about development. And I think there's a scenario where you say, hey, Jake's the backup this year because you don't want to throw a rookie into a situation where he's not going to be having good protection. He's not going to have playmakers. You're going to have a defense teeing off on you because you haven't game planned anything. I think, and if you were in a scenario where you had to play a quarterback to start, I think you would be more likely to play Rattler in general, because you have a week of prep and you can game plan, you can do whatever, and he can be prepared to go in there. Because I do think people undervalue the developmental curve from year one to year two, in the sense of like everything's going 100 miles an hour in year one. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the number one pick. I don't care if you're the number 150 pick. I don't care if you're whatever Tom Brady was. Everything's going too fast as a rookie. Now you get into year two and things feel like they're slowing down. So I don't know, but either way, I need people to understand that, like, all being the backup quarterback this year, all that guarantees you is that you're the backup quarterback this year. It does not mean anything in terms of like, oh, you are the future starter of this team. Because when I think when Dennis Allen says they're still competing, he's not necessarily saying they're still competing to be the backup. He's saying they're still competing in the sense of like, yeah, who's the next quarterback? That's the competition, and you're going to get into next offseason if you're not going back to Derek. These guys are going to compete. That's the competition. It's not to see who gets to hold the clipboard.
Derek. Charlie, you going to make it a trifecta and talk about Rattler too?
No, I'm going to talk about Lincoln Riley.
Okay.
Guys, looking at, we heard the audio from Brian Kelly earlier on in the hour. About Lincoln Riley's offensive scheme, the air raid offense, and how it's been so efficient throughout the years. And I went and looked up the numbers, and I mean, he's right. Since he became a head coach in 2017 at Oklahoma, did you guys know that Lincoln Riley's worst point per game year total in that finish in the FBS, it was 8th.
Wow.
Out of 130 teams.
Yeah.
So going year by year, 2017 OU, they finished with 45.1 points per game, 12-2 record. They finished 3rd in the FBS. In 2018, 48.4 points per game, 12-2, finished 1st in the FBS. 2019 OU, 12-2 record, 42.1 points per game, 6th. 2020 OU, 9-2, 43 points per game. 2021 OU, 39.1 points per game. That was the lowest total, was 39.1 points per game, which finished 8th. And then 2022 at USC, first year there, 41.4 points per game with an 11-3 record, finished 3rd in total points per game. 2023 USC, 41.8 points per game. Despite that 41.8 points per game, they finished with an 8-5 record, which is the worst record in Lincoln Riley's coaching tenure so far. Guys, he just puts up points. There's no other way to put it. In 92 games that he's played, a 74-18 record, and a big reason for that, his team's averaged 43 points per game. Yeah. 43 points per game in a sample size of 92 games. So LSU's defense, yes, we've heard they've been improved under new DC Blake Baker.
Right.
They've got a good assistant coaching staff there. It's going to be a test, regardless of, new quarterback Miller Moss. Like, as Joe DeLeon said, still a 4-star quarterback, just a guy kind of similar with Garrett Nussmeier
that's
stuck
wings.
With their right. program, sat behind Heisman-winning quarterbacks, and they have playmakers on the field. So, expect some points and expect some fireworks, I would say, in Las Vegas, because that's all that Lincoln Riley's done for basically his entire career.
Definitely seems like we're headed for a shootout in Las Vegas on Sunday night. That was Triple Option, folks. We'll be back with more sports talk closing out the 5 o'clock hour right after this on WWL. Stay tuned. Just want to remind everybody, LSU kicking off the season against USC Sunday in Vegas. You can start your game day with Mike Dottilier and guest host Jeff Palermo. That's at 2 o'clock in the Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgate Show. You can even meet up with the guys. They're going to be live from the Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge. Come out and size up the game at Acme with 16 surround sound TVs and the best drink specials around. Great place to hang out and talk LSU football. All thanks to the good folks at Map Construction. We'll hear from renowned defensive line coach Pete Jenkins and WWL TV sports director Doug Mouton at 4:30. The LSU Sports Network takes over with their official pregame show, and then it's kickoff with the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, and color analyst Jacob Hester at 6:30. Tigers versus Trojans Sunday on WWL. We'll be back with more sports talk right after the top of the hour news break right here. Stay tuned.